Blog Talk Radio.
Coming to you from the Blog Talk Radio studios here in the heart of Hudson County. Folks, you know it's always in Union City and Weehawken, respectively. Fancast Media probably brings to you the latest edition of Working the Marks. And I am New Jersey's premier award-winning journalist, the people's choice and the people's voice, Professor Fernando Uribe. And he is New Jersey's premier wrestling analyst. The PBR superstar, the glorious, the notorious, the illustrious Patrick Rivera. What's going on, PBR?
Wow, what an intro. It just gets better and better every time, man. I mean, I got to thank you, man. You really put me over well. Maybe there's a guy named Uncle Dave that might disagree with maybe some of the things you might say, but that's for another show. That's for another time. But now just happy to be back, man. I feel like it's been a fucking while. It's been like 2 weeks, right?
Correct. Yes, it's been 2 weeks, and you know, we got a lot to.
Wow, and we got to see our Devils.
That's right.
We got to see our Devils.
That's right. Our Devils are still in the thick of it in the Eastern Conference. So for all the Broadway Blue Skirts fans that love to listen to Working the Marks, you know, you're in the hunt too. But you know, it's the Devils that'll be challenging for the Eastern Conference Championship, hopefully in a couple of months. As Jack Hughes, according to our coach, is due to return soon. So that's good news for us, brother. So. I'm excited for that and excited to be back on the air with you. And folks, always remember, write to the show's inbox. We'd love to get email, whether you like us, you hate us, whether you love Pat, whether you hate Pat, whether you love me or hate me, whatever. Write to the show, workingthemarks@gmail.com. Certainly, we love to get feedback from you. Once again, our inbox, workingthemarks@gmail.com. Don't forget to follow the show on Instagram, @working_the_marks. And, of course, on Twitter, follow us as well @working_marks. And of course, our own personal Instagram and Twitter. Make sure you check me out. Same handle @TheFernandoZone. And certainly for the PBR superstar, hit him up on Instagram @PaddyReakin. That's PADDY.
No, don't stop. Can you stop plugging my personal account? I don't want anybody fucking messaging me. All right. I don't want anybody messaging me. That's what the show's for. Talk to me on the show. Talk to me in the street. Talk to me when I'm leaving your house, when your mom's waking up. Whatever it is, just talk to me then. See me in person or send something to the show's account, okay? But don't message me personally, and no fucking scams, all right? I'm not selling internet, and I'm not selling Herbalife, so leave me alone.
And he's not selling crypto either.
Sorry, just have to get that out.
Absolutely. And he's not selling crypto either, so folks.
Well,
sure,
of course
also...
I'm not selling crypto because I like Superman. I don't want to kill Superman. So, yeah, you know what I mean?
And, of course, folks, make sure you like us on Facebook @WorkingTheMarks. And certainly I cannot say enough about our great producer. Actually, he's the other PR here in the show, our PR rep here, D. Rotten.
Yeah.
We won't give out his government name. But D. Rotten does a great, great job with our social media. D. Rotten finds all these pictures of your favorite host here on the program, folks, somewhere in the bowels of the cloud, as they say. He finds those pictures of us. during our glory years. I have to say that, though. But, folks, we appreciate you tuning in from wherever and however you may be doing. So always check us out, once again, via Fancast Media. And check out our episodes at blogtalkradio.com/workingthemarks. Take them with you wherever it is you take your podcast, whether you're going to the gym to work off those, you know, kind of annoying pounds right before it gets a little warmer. You want to go outside, look good with a shirt off, you know, whatever. Guys, girls, walking your dog, whatever it is you're doing, folks, take Working the Marks with you wherever and whenever you wish to, each and every day. Now, Pat, you know, I got to tell you, man, it's, you know, first of all, happy President's Day weekend. As a history buff and as a history educator, obviously, you know how much I love President's Day, and I get to enjoy the long weekend for sure. A lot to talk about. Elimination Chamber this weekend coming up tomorrow. You know, kind of like these PLEs on a Saturday night. I'm not going to lie to you, man. Even though it's a holiday weekend, I don't mind PLEs on a Saturday.
Hold on a second, Fern. Wait a minute. You just mentioned it's President's Day weekend, right?
Correct.
Well, Fern, I got somebody calling me here on three-way. It's WWE Hall of Famer and former President of the United States, Donald Trump. Donald,
get him on.
Donald,
get
are you here
get
with
on.
Us? Well, you know, hello, are you there? Fernando, first of all, I just want to say I love your work. You're a great guy, stand-up guy, wonderful guy, one of the best guys I ever met, okay? You remind me of Lindsay. I don't know if you remember Lindsay. He was the man that represented me against Vince McMahon. So, I just want to say you're a great guy. You're not a hack journalist. You're not fake news. This Rivera, you know, I don't know about you. Hey, Donnie, chill out, all right? Chill out, Donnie. All right. Listen, I just want to say to everybody, have a great President's Day weekend, okay? Drink a lot, shoot a lot, and, you know, have a great time, okay? And girls, call me. You got the email.
Love you, Mr. President. Again, I still think you won. But love you, Mr. President. Enjoy your weekend with Melania and all your great family members. So, Pat, isn't it great to get the former president on the show today? Isn't that great?
How did he get the – wait a minute. Hold on. Wait, I got another president calling me. Joe Biden's on the line, ladies and gentlemen. President Joe – hello? Joe?
Hello?
Hey.
Mr. President, how are you awake at this hour? Mr. President, how are you awake at this hour? Mr. President, is that you, Mr. President? Like, it's
Hunter.
Past your bedtime. How are you with her? There with us.
Hunter, is this you, Hunter? They
no,
still don't
no,
know what's
no.
on the laptop.
No, Mr. President, no. It's past your bedtime,
what?
Isn't it? Like, how are you, Mr. President, how are you? We appreciate you joining us on the show, Mr. President. I thought it was way past your bedtime, Mr. President. Thank you for joining us.
I took a Pepsi to stay up. I just wanted to come on here and say Merry Christmas to everybody. And I hope that y'all have a great Christmas, all right? Come on, man.
Well, Mr. President, we appreciate
Hello?
You.
Hello?
Mr. President.
Joe.
Well,
I think he hung up.
I think he went back to take his nap. So, we appreciate the 45th and the 46th president joining us on the air today, folks, here on a special
Fern.
President's Day edition.
Fern,
so, yes.
Wait a minute. He knows Triple H? He was asking for Hunter, so he probably thought he was calling Triple H, right?
Probably, yeah. He's probably trying to see if he can book something because God knows they ain't booking nothing at the White House. So who knows? Maybe, yeah. Who knows? Maybe he's trying to look for Paul
Levesque.
That's
something.
I'm telling you. We got some great listeners on this show here. We got the 45th and the 46th president tuning in here to the program. Unbelievable. But, Pat, you know, again, I love – PLEs on a Saturday. Tomorrow night's Elimination Chamber, without question, I think is going to be one of the better PLEs we've seen in a while. A culmination of a lot of things going on, obviously, before we get certainly to the main event. A good card, though. I know some, you know, fans on the internet, marks, get all fickle about a card. It's not long enough or it's not whatever. I mean, Jesus Christ, you can't always make these people happy, but certainly – you know, the final stop on the road to WrestleMania, man, is tomorrow night in Montreal, Quebec, Canada. One of my favorite cities I've enjoyed partying at. Great, great city. I've enjoyed going to the Bell Center. I have a Montreal Canadiens jersey at home that I bought in Montreal as a big hockey fan that I am. And tomorrow night, man, the Bell Center. The road to WrestleMania really continues with two outstanding chamber matches, man. One for the opportunity to challenge Bianca Belair at WrestleMania in Inglewood, California at SoFi Stadium. Certainly Asuka versus Liv Morgan versus Nikki Cross versus Raquel Rodriguez versus Natalia versus Carmella. Yum, 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 boy. Oof. Hell of a match there. Participants, a lot of veterans, a lot of good workers in this chamber match. Winner gets Bianca Belair at WrestleMania. Bro, how are you seeing this one?
Well, first of all, Mark's complaining. What else is new? Water wet, earth round, you know. Obviously, we know that the marks are going to not like it. And now apparently they're size queens. It's too big. It's too small. It's too long. It's too short. It's too this. It's too that. I mean, whatever. Maybe they should apply that to their appearance, you know. Maybe they should, stop crying and complaining. Because no matter what, they're still going to end up watching anyway. But that's a whole other ball of wax, my friend. So the chamber match with the women, I think, is going to be excellent. If I had to just shot in the dark, pick somebody who I think is going to win us, I got to go with Psycho Clown Asuka. I think they match up really, really well. I think visually, those are going to be two great entrances for a championship match. You know Asuka could bring it in those big matches. You know Bianca could bring it in those big matches. Out of all those girls in the chamber, that's the one that I find the most compelling against Bianca.
I'm with you. I feel that, listen, if any of the ladies won, I would not be overly disappointed, to be very honest with you. But I have to say I'm going with Asuka also. I like this persona that many in the States have not been privy to, obviously. If you've been following Asuka for her career, you know where this is coming from. But I certainly like it. I like the presentation. I think that while we got to see Liv Morgan with a little bit of a title run, not the girl, I think, to maybe unseat Bianca. Not to say that Bianca's going to lose at WrestleMania, but theoretically, if you had to make it, you know, if you're looking at, oh, well, what's believable? Who do you think could really make this a believable match? Who could really take out Bianca? I think you have to look at someone like an Asuka. I mean, to some extent, Natalya, because she's a veteran and she's also been a veteran of the biz and a great worker. But when you think about the program and the character work that's going to go into the main event, you know, for the Raw Women's Championship, I would say that, you know, I love Carmella. She's visually gratifying to look at. I'm not going to lie to you. But, you know, Carmella and Bianca, not particularly, I think, overwhelming. Nikki Cross, I love Nikki, that crazy character from her days with Sanity. I think it's a great look for her. Kind of liked her old music, but that's just me. Raquel Rodriguez, gotten a lot better since her call-up from NXT to SmackDown and now on the Raw roster. You know, again, I would not be disappointed with any of the ladies winning here. I think they're all the deserving. But I'm with you, man. I think Asuka, you know, I think especially the evil Asuka, right, that optic, I think, is a good look. And I think it could pose some problems for Bianca.
Yeah, absolutely. More importantly, I just think that, you know, you kind of want to give the fans somebody to get behind against Bianca. You know what I mean? Bianca's so good that I think she's taken even the biggest haters and turned them into fans. That's how talented she is. And you're not the only one. You're not the only one. There's a lot of other – I mean, look, I was skeptical about her at the very beginning, but then once I saw how she adapted and all the little things that she did in the ring and just how she's able to improvise, you know, and she had a match with Carmella where, like, there was almost a really, I mean, potentially dangerous botch that could have injured Carmella, and Bianca adjusted and was able to, you know, save her pretty much. That right there, like – I was just like, wow, what a talent. Carmella has really stepped it up. She's come into her own more so, but that's not very appetizing. I just think that Asuka is somebody that the fans could get behind. And I also feel like Triple H is kind of trying to kind of erase the memory of like the goofy, you know, funnier, more anime-esque Asuka. And he's kind of trying to get her back to being that killer that she was in NXT. So, you know, I think that this is a good matchup because again, they're both two top workers, but more importantly, Asuka's somebody that the fans can kind of rally behind against Bianca. And I think that's really important.
Absolutely. In the other chamber match for the evening, it will be for the coveted, United States Heavyweight Championship. Champion Austin Theory will defend against Seth Rollins, against Montez Ford, against Damian Priest, against Johnny Gargano, Johnny Wrestling, and Bronson Reed. I got to tell you, man, I think that this match is kind of a representation, I think, of the direction that Paul Levesque is taking, obviously, as head of creative. You know, if you would have told me a year ago on a PLE on a Saturday night on the road to WrestleMania, I'd see Johnny Gargano and Bronson Reed in a chamber match challenging for the U.S. Championship. I would have said, Pat, you know, I don't know where you got those edibles, man, but whew, they spiked it with something. But that is not the case here. These are guys that Triple H, sink or swim, is going to elevate. and put him in sort of the limelight and put him in mainstream and let them work and see what happens. I just get a sense, man, this like looks a little bit like a clusterfuck with a lot of good stars in it. I just think somehow Austin Theory retains and heads off to WrestleMania as the United States heavyweight champion.
Yeah, I'm going to agree with the finish. I think that this match has potential to be match of the night, like to surprise, you know, and that's saying a lot when you got Sammy against Roman in that main event in Montreal with everything that's transpired. But, you know, we'll get to that later on. But I just think that these guys are out to prove something, especially Gargano, who hasn't really caught on, but is a talented guy. Reed, who just came back, who, you know, had his moment, I guess you could say, on the indies and in Japan doing his thing, but is back and really needs to prove something. And came back with, I hate to say it, kind of a whimper. I mean,
yeah,
it was just not very impactful, not a big pop, you know. So I think that he's out to prove something. Rollins, I think it's going to come down to Rollins and Theory. And I think that somehow Logan Paul is going to be involved, and that's going to end up setting up Logan Paul and Seth at WrestleMania. Because I think Logan Paul and Austin Theory being chummy is just like a douchebag dream, you know? Somewhere like, you know, 90s pilled up Shawn Michaels is like applauding at the thought of that. You know, it's just the epitome of douchebaggery. It's a great aesthetic, you know?
No, it is. But, Pat, what's interesting is that I think that – I don't know if this is just sort of a concerted effort, because both times they presented Logan Paul the first time he teamed up with The Miz and they were the heel tag team, but he was getting cheered incredibly at SummerSlam. And I'm like, wow, okay, maybe they're onto something here. When he challenged Roman, even though he was technically the face because Roman's the heel, still got a good reaction by and large. So it's interesting that if they're not trying to portray him as a douchebag character or the, you know, not the Hollywood movie star, but like the social media influencer or, I mean, yeah, that's what he is. You know, he's got a very successful podcast. He's an influencer. Yeah. You know, I don't know how that's, you know, how that looks now. You know, it's like, can you make him evil enough to, you know, team with Theory or have his back as opposed to Rollins, who I got to say that, yeah, they turned him face recently, but like, it just seems like a lot of the antics he was doing, it's not much has changed with his presentation, which is fine. I think it's great character work for Seth Rollins. I just think that it'll be interesting because I don't know if the fans would completely just boo Logan Paul out of the building at WrestleMania and just overwhelmingly cheer Seth. Seth is going to have his fans. There's no question about that. But does that mean that Logan Paul's going to get booed out of the building? That remains to be seen, though. You know, obviously, we'll have to wait and see if that materializes tomorrow night in the men's match.
Well, I mean, look, as far as Logan Paul goes, I think they've tried a variety of different things with him to kind of feel how the audience feels about him, because what your perception is in, you know, society or, you know, your chosen field, you know, in his case, boxing, people look at him as an asshole, you know, and him and his brother and, you know, Big Mouth. His brother's kind of earned, I think, more respect, I would say. I think they both deserve respect for committing themselves. And I mean, look, they took a shortcut. It is what it is. They had the resources to do it. That makes them automatic heels. But, you know, I think Triple H is kind of looking at it now and saying to himself, you know what? This guy's a fucking heel. Like, he, based on, I think, the response that he got against Roman, I think that that's something that if it would have been anybody else, they would have become a babyface. They would have come back a babyface. But because it's him, he came back and he's still a heel. And I just think that putting him with Rollins is excellent. Rollins is a dude who's next level. I've said it before, best worker in the biz right now. Could make anybody look like $1 million, could elevate people, could put people over. I mean, like, he's just – the guy's an amazing talent. And I just think that him working with Logan Paul will take Logan Paul that next step. But I think, you know, Logan Paul is definitely going to be the heel, man. So I expect nothing short of a great match there. Also, another guy that we completely forgot to mention or even talk about that's in the chamber match is Montez Ford. And he's another guy similar to Bronson Reed, Johnny Gargano. He wants to prove that, like, hey, I can take this opportunity and I can make myself even bigger than what I am. And let me tell you something. That guy, I've said it before, has all the potential in the world, could be a top guy in the next 10 to 15 years, and really just, like, has the technical aspect, the in-ring work, the charisma. The guy just gets it, and he just has steadily improved. So I think that this could be a breakout moment for him, and this could also elevate him as well. So I fully expect all the guys in this match to put in a shift and to aspire to make this the match of the night.
Oh, absolutely. I certainly think you're absolutely right. I think this has the capability to be match of the night for sure. In a mixed tag match, Edge and Beth Phoenix will take on Finn Balor and Rhea Ripley from the Judgment Day. You know, this has been going on for a while with Edge and the Judgment Day. Obviously, Rhea just winning the Women's Royal Rumble, first woman to ever do it from the number one slot. We know that she's penciled in to face Charlotte Flair. Woo! At WrestleMania on what night remains to be seen. Whether or not it might main event one of the evenings remains to be seen. You know, Finn Balor, I think, you know, him and Edge and that feud has been going on for quite some time. Certainly we know what Judgment Day did to Beth months ago. She's returning. Listen, I think it'll be a good opening match if that's what I think it would be. Maybe, I don't know, maybe one of the chamber matches is the first match. Who knows? But I think this match will be good to watch. A lot of drama, a lot of character work there. It's been building up for a while. I would be shocked if Rey Mysterio does not show up here to do something to cost the Judgment Day the match and subsequently set up his showdown with his son coming up at WrestleMania 39 in Hollywood. Again, I could be getting ahead of myself. That seems like, oh, that's just, you know, predictable booking, but not really. I think it's something that maybe they're building towards. I'd like to see that. We'll see. I kind of see Edge and Beth going over. It just seems like Finn and the Judgment have always gone over on them and have always gotten the upper hand. At some point, maybe, hopefully, the faces get a win here. Maybe it's tomorrow night.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I agree on a variety of different subjects you touched on there. I think having Edge come out first and open up the PLE is really, really smart because they're in Canada. And you know Edge is going to get a huge pop in Canada. So I kind of expect them to start, you know, with a Canadian or with somebody that's super duper over. But yeah, this is a match that Beth and Edge can win. You know, Dom could get involved. Ray could come out and help Edge because they have that history. You know, this is something where you could do that to set up Ray versus Dom. You know, I hope that they do it for Ray's mask because that would just be awesome. That would be awesome. And, you know, I don't know. I think Ray, if Ray's going to continue to work, you know, obviously, you know, he's Rey Mysterio. He's a huge star. He's one of the most adored wrestlers of all time. You know, I think that they should definitely do something interesting where Dom either retires him or takes his mask. That would be kind of cool, but who knows where that goes. And, you know,
I don't think, listen, again, unless there's something we don't know, how far along Ray is in terms of maybe the end of his career, but I kind of like to see Dad go over. I think, you know, what we've been seeing is great character work, the son betraying his father. I think it wouldn't be the end of the world to get that feel-good moment.
It would.
For the dad to get
it,
over.
It would. Fuck the feel-good moment. Fuck the feel-good moment. This kid has a ton of heat now. You've got to capitalize this on this.
But
like,
you can still get
Ray
this,
doesn't,
still
Ray doesn't
heat,
need to go over. But Ray doesn't need to go over. Ray doesn't need the win. Ray is Rey Mysterio. He's Rey Mysterio. It doesn't matter how many fucking times he loses, he's still Rey Mysterio. Dom is Dom Mysterio, but he's not at that level yet. You know what I'm saying? And I think, given everything that's transpired, Dom has to go over. I'd like to see Dom go over at Mania.
Pat, he'll get over. He's doing great character
you
work.
You got to keep the heat going.
Nah,
man.
I don't know.
He needs that win.
I kind of like to see, after all the tormenting, after all the antagonism, after all of the beatdowns, you know what? Again, we got that great feel-good moment with Ray at WrestleMania in 2006. Let's have Dad go over on his evil son. I don't think that's the worst thing in the world, dude. Let's be fair about it.
It's not a good idea, Fern. It's just not necessary. It's not necessary. What does that accomplish? Okay, Ray goes over, then what? Then what?
They can still,
what,
they can
Dom
still
loses
feuding.
All this heat?
No, it doesn't.
They can still
keep
feuding, but it's not. But it's not going to matter as much. It's not going to have that heat, man. It's not going to have that heat. What's the one thing we're always criticizing AEW about? They don't strike when the iron's hot. You've got to strike when the iron's hot here. You think Ray really gives a rat's ass about losing his kid? This is fucking what he's bred him for.
Yeah.
To do
job
to his son, you know?
No, that's fair.
But getting back to the match, yeah, I mean, I'm just saying, you know, I just think it's a better idea because this kid is hot right now, dude. I would argue he's the second biggest heel in the company. I would argue that. I would argue that he's certainly, like, up there. Like, you know what I mean? Roman obviously is the number one heel in the business. I don't want to fucking hear it. You know, everybody could say, oh, MJF, why? Because MJF says fuck? I say fuck. It doesn't make me a heel. You know what I'm saying? MJF's getting a little stale with his shtick. Roman is the top heel in the business. I would argue that Dom Mysterio is right underneath Roman. Right underneath Roman in number two, man. Because the time the kid
Absolutely.
Does the Eddie Guerrero thing, everything he's done, he says he's a heat man. And look at him, he's a skinny shit. Like, you know, you hate the kid when you look at him. Perfect fucking heel. But getting back to the match, I just think Rhea cannot get pinned in this at all. Like, that's obvious.
Agreed.
So if anybody's doing the job here, it's going to be Finn. And I think that goes a long way to helping set up Finn and Edge one-on-one at WrestleMania. But I'd like to see Brood Edge against the Demon. You know, I'd like to see this iteration of the Demon, you know?
Yes. I think that will be captivating for sure at WrestleMania. In the main event tomorrow night for the undisputed WWE Universal title. And it's funny, though, Pat, because, like, at any other point in the year, right, it almost feels like there's an unpredictability factor. But it's really, like, now more than ever lately, it's like Sami Zayn's going into this match tomorrow in his hometown in Montreal, Quebec, Canada, as hot a babyface as we can remember in a while. And again, the Bloodline storyline has been masterfully crafted. It's been unbelievable. You know the crowd of Montreal is going to be super hot for Sammy. You know, the potential for an upset tomorrow night in Montreal is there. It's not going to happen. I think we've learned in the last 24 hours that both Jimmy and Jay can't travel out of the United States. And even though on the storyline last week, it's like, oh, they're not needed in Montreal. They can still show up. We haven't seen Kevin Owens really since the beatdown at the Royal Rumble. You know, he's right nearby in Montreal, you know, originally from there. He'll get a pop too. I could see somehow this becoming a clusterfuck. And ultimately, when you think Jay is going to be on Sammy's side, he doesn't. I think we've read these rumors for a while. It just seems like it'll find a way for Jay to turn on Sammy ultimately. Roman retains. He's already had 900-plus days as Universal Champion, as the undisputed WWE. I mean, that's 300-something days. But the point is that this certainly, I think, would set up Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens to challenge the Usos at WrestleMania for the tag titles, and it kind of clears the path for Roman to face Cody, which is what I think is the plan, since it's becoming more and more obvious, unless there's like some, you know, as I say, last minute draft day transaction or something that Dwayne Johnson's going to make an appearance tomorrow night or do something on the road to WrestleMania. I think the road's being paved clear for Roman versus Cody and the Usos to be challenged by Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens due to Sami losing tomorrow night. That's how I see it. I could be wrong.
No, I think you nailed it. I'll tell you what, you know, for this Montreal crowd, for this crowd, in Montreal, Quebec, Canada, eh? Hey, all the French Canadians, they talk like this. Huh? You ever noticed that? I think the only other thing that they could do to make up for Sammy not winning the title is reuniting him and Steen and them having a moment where they have each other's back and they give each other a big hug and the place will go fucking nuts. I mean, I could see the visual right now. And I think that that is good enough for what the fans there want. Obviously, people are going to nitpick. Oh, it's predictable. It's this and that. Motherfucker, you haven't watched wrestling before? You think this is the first time that shit like this went down? You watched it back then and you fucking loved it. Now you hate it. Why? Because you listened to some shoot interview or you read a book and all of a sudden you think you know about the business? Fucking enjoy it. Fucking enjoy it, all right? Fucking enjoy it. You know what I mean? Like, you went to see Infinity Wars. You knew a bunch of motherfuckers were going to die. You know, did that stop you from going to see the movie? No. You loved it. You enjoyed it because it was entertaining. And this is going to be entertaining. And I think that they're going to have a hell of a match. I think that they're eventually going to make it, like you said, where, you know, Jay, you know, turns on Sammy and Steen comes out and they kind of clear house after the match. And I think it sets up the Usos against Jericho and Steen. Great fucking match, in my opinion. And you got Cody and you got Roman. Again, I don't rule out surprises of any kind. I don't. I don't know what they're thinking. For all we know, they could be reshuffling the whole thing. Not likely. Not likely. But you do have to kind of leave that little 1%. You know what I'm saying? I think, like you said, I think it's going to go down just like that. And I think it's going to be a great match. I think the crowd is going to be electric. And I just think that it's definitely going to be a very, very memorable match.
Oh, absolutely. And again, you know, in a city like Montreal, where we've seen some screw jobs 20 years ago, Mr. McMahon screwing Hulk Hogan out of a match with The Rock, Dwayne Johnson, and their
rematch
from the great match he had at WrestleMania the year before in Toronto. Certainly going back to 1997 with Mr. McMahon screwing Bret Hart. I mean, Montreal's had its fair share of screw jobs.
Whoa. First of all, nobody screwed Bret Hart, okay? Nobody screwed Bret Hart. To my knowledge, Bret Hart is a heterosexual male. He does the screwing, okay? So this screwing that you're talking about, I don't know what you're talking about. It just sounds like long-winded crying more than anything else, okay? But that Hulk Hogan Rock thing, miscarriage of justice, awful. I want to throw up thinking about it. I'm so sick to my stomach about what happened. It's disgusting. But 1997, all I remember was Bret Hart tapping out to the sharpshooter, the hold that his brother Owen taught him. That's all I remember, you know?
Well, you know, again, you know, Montreal has had its fair share.
Couldn't even get to the ropes. He was screaming, squealing in agony.
You know, a city that's had its fair share of miscarriages of justice in the last 30 years, it'll be interesting tomorrow night for sure. Folks, again, check out Elimination Chamber tomorrow night on Peacock. Obviously, we'll be subjected to 35 ads as opposed to the 37 ads we do when we watch replays on Peacock. But it'll be interesting to watch it live tomorrow night. No, of course I'm still going to watch it. I mean, I don't remember having to live with 30 ads during a live pay-per-view or PLE, for God's sakes. But, I mean, you know. I mean, hey, those are the times we're living in, I guess, right now. Where
I know I say this to you a lot about a variety of different topics, but times change, pal. Times change.
I'm just saying, you know, I got to endure like 35 ads during a live show plus the 37 during a replay. I mean,
so
Jesus Christ.
What happens? Like, do you start bleeding, like, randomly? Do, like, bruises appear in your body since you're enduring so much watching a fucking commercial? You know, you watch how many commercials when you watch The Bachelor? How many commercials do you watch then, huh?
But that's broadcast television.
You know, or when you're watching
broadcast television.
Okay, but like, dude, they got ads. They got fucking ads. This is how they're able to get the big bucks, man. This is how
they're able to
be number one. This is why
they already have the big bucks. The stock should be more expensive or at least more profitable, in my opinion.
You can never get enough money. You can never get enough money, okay?
That is
this
true.
Is the reason why
that's
you got Pat Mahomes, great fucking name, by the way, okay? Great fucking name. And Tom Brady, you better watch out. I see a curly afro on its way with the number 15 chasing after you, okay? Hell of an athlete, that Patrick Mahomes. And what was he posing with? Not the AEW title, not the Impact Championship, not the AAA title, okay? He was posing with the WWE Championship. He took that motherfucker on a parade. He took it in a port-a-john. Okay?
Yeah.
He loved that thing.
Yeah.
And that's WWE's top dog. Okay?
And by the way, I don't know if you saw that video, but he literally was so drunk, he literally took the Lombardi Trophy and gave it to just somebody in the crowd. Like, that's how hammered he was. I don't know if you saw that video. It was gold. I was dying laughing watching that. He was so wasted, he just gave
it. I remember my first beer. I remember my first beer, okay?
You know? He was wasted. It was great. Folks, again, tomorrow night, great PLE tomorrow on Peacock, Elimination Chamber, the final stop on the road to WrestleMania 39 in Hollywood. Some other news, man, in the news cycle, apparently, while my boy, the Switchblade, too sweet, Jay White is going to be one of the hottest free agents. Apparently, there's an even hotter free agent being talked about right now in pro wrestling circles. It seems like Olivier, you know, Twinkle Toes himself, Kenny Omega, is on the radar for Paul Levesque in WWE. A lot of rumors, man. Obviously, we know the Young Bucks' contract expires in 2024. We know that Kenny Omega's deal, I think, is up soon as well. I think maybe at the end of this year. But be interesting, man, because I think that while we applaud him and the Bucks and Cody, along with Tony Khan for, you know, building AEW and putting it on the map, as they say, and being sort of the founding fathers of it, it just seems like Kenny Omega doesn't move the needle ratings-wise. He was a great act in Japan, always been a good worker. My issue with him is not the work. I just think that him and the Bucks have just – they're not moving needles. They're not moving ratings. And we'll talk about the ratings in a little bit, obviously. But it just seems that, you know what, maybe at this stage of his career, going to WWE would not be the worst thing for Kenny Omega. And I think with better direction and better creative and better presentation and just a better wrestling mind, like Paul Levesque, for example, I think it might suit him. We're seeing what the benefits Cody is now reaping from jumping ship. And I think it was sort of a loud message, like, hey, come over here. We're going to use you to the best of your ability. We're not going to just have you lingering and catering or wasting you. I think Kenny Omega sees what Cody's going through. And I think, you know what, at this age, Kenny Omega's window is kind of small, man. He's got a lot of miles on that body. If he can jump to WWE, it wouldn't be the worst thing for him. And it's not like he's not going to get paid. It's not like, oh, my God, you know, he's going to take less of a deal. You know, WWE can put over money in that contract. And I think it'll be interesting to see if Kenny Omega jumps ship.
Well, I mean, you know, if there's anybody that knows about small windows, it's my pal Mark. And, you know, I just got to say that, like, I think Kenny Omega is in a position where he's got to seize the opportunity, if this is, in fact, true, okay? He was office in AEW and stuff like that, but is AEW going to stand the test of time? Probably not. You know, Kenny is approaching 40. Kenny wants to maximize his profits, you know? Kenny wants to, you know, succeed on the big stage. I mean, any wrestler that gets into the business that says, I don't want to be in WWE or I wouldn't want to be in WWE, I'm sorry, man. You're off your rocker, you know, because you're going to be globally recognized, okay? People in Japan know Kenny. There's people around the world that know Kenny. But WWE could make him a superstar. They could make him huge. More importantly, the thing about Kenny is that he's not afraid to be a character. He's not afraid to be outlandish. He's not afraid to put himself out there. And I think that with the proper oversight, you know, WWE, their writers, Triple H, I think that he could put himself in a position where he could just get even bigger than what he is now and maybe even have a run with the title or in the main event scene. You know, there's a lot of appealing matchups for him. And also the fact that they've kind of crossed over into video games and stuff like that. And that's something big for him. Do I see it happening? Nah. I think he's pretty stuck to what he's doing. obviously the booking, the creative there, what's happened, we don't know. We don't know. We don't know what the situation is. But if Kenny or the Bucks are willing to go to WWE, then that probably tells you Punk's going to come back to AEW or vice versa. You know what I mean? But I don't know, man. It's, would I like to see it? Yes. But do I think it's going to happen? Probably not. But stranger things have happened. So I don't know. I wouldn't be surprised. You know?
I agree with you. I think there's an element, too, where do you want to make money or do you want to just linger around? And I think that what the Bucks and Omega have at their disposal is, you know, their office, whatever you want to call it, office, EVPs. They have a lot of creative control. And, you know, we've talked about this off the air a lot. I think if you give the wrong guys complete creative control and leave them to their own devices, it doesn't always work out well. And I think we're seeing that in AEW where you're seeing a climate of complacency. And, you know, here's a newsflash. You know, the Bucks and Omega don't move the rate, don't move the needle. They're not this ratings blockbuster when they're on television. And again, we'll talk about it in a little bit. But it just seems like, you know, hey, they need a more mainstream audience. Again, they have a lot of mileage on their bodies. And at this point in their career, in their life, in their adult life, as Omega's approaching 40, as I think the Bucks are probably mid to late 30s, if not maybe 40 also, wrestling on a global stage like being with WWE would help them. Now, would that take them being adults and saying, I need to take direction? Not to say they weren't taking direction in New Japan, because that's not fair, because I think they were, obviously, right? We know the way the books there were looking.
Yeah.
You know, it just, I don't know how willing they are to let go of that complacency that they've been living with since they helped find, you know, since they were founded with AEW. I don't know. It just, it's hard, man, as you get older, sometimes to kick those vices and, you know, you're used to doing things a certain way. Men and women can be fickle, but, you know, if you want to make money and get merch deals and this and that, they would be smart to go to WWE. But I don't think so. I'm with you. I don't see Kenny Omega leaving either. I would just want to just see the Jim Cornette review. When, if he does jump ship, what's going to happen? I think Cornette will be like laughing, like, uh-oh, Olivier's going to have to take direction now, you know, and Twinkle Toes is going to have to take advice from someone who knows more than him, and he's got to shut the fuck up about it. I think that would be glorious to listen to as well, but that's just me.
I think so. I mean, I think for the listeners of James Cornette, you know, and shout out to Jim Cornette and Brian Lass. They do a great job with their show. You know, there's some things I might disagree with Cornette about. But what I like about Cornette is that, you know, he's really rooted in a lot of the important old school elements that matter to the boys that have kind of disappeared, obviously. But again, things change. You know, I just think that Kenny would be great in WWE. He really would. And I think that it would be a shot in the arm for him. And I think that he would get over really huge with that audience. Obviously, all the AEW fans are going to be really bitter and really mad. And they're probably going to, you know, give him the same type of shit that they give Cody. Because apparently there's a section of their audience, believe it or not, that feel like Cody sucks. Like Cody's not the guy to main event WrestleMania. It's Sami Zayn. Sami Zayn's the guy to main event WrestleMania. Well, Cody's going to be the guy. Cody's a better story. Cody looks the part. Cody can talk the part. Cody can be the part. So can Sami. But Sami's not going to be your champion long term. Sami's like a Mick Foley. You know what I mean? Great guy,
yeah.
Top guy, could come in, could do the job, but that's not going to be your fucking spokesman. You know, that's not going to be your spokesperson. Like, Cody is that guy. Cody, Bianca Belair, you know, Becky, you know, Charlotte, like those people, Roman, you know which people are the ones that are good representatives, and he's a great representative. And so is Sami. But Cody is the main event guy. And I think that them having this match now, them, and by the way, expect Roman to go over clean. Because they might have interferences and all this stuff, and all this stuff might happen, but I don't think it's going to play into the finish of the match. Because if you do that, then right there you're giving fans a reason to want to cheer for a Sami rematch at WrestleMania. Now, could they go triple threat? Maybe. I think, personally, Roman needs to lose one-on-one. You know? You need to have
You know, like
you got to have a big payoff with this. You can't just have some you know, shit where, like, you know, somebody cheats on Roman or whatever, like, you know, some bullshit finish. Like, Roman has to lose clean when he loses finally. And
yeah.
I think Sammy has to lose clean at this upcoming PLE. And I think by Sammy losing clean, you eliminate all doubt. Like, that's it. Like, it's done. You know? Like, you're good. Now, okay, we did Sammy. Sammy lost clean. Sammy cannot get a rematch. So, you know, for all you hardcore fucking wrestling fans, you're going to be like, well, you know, he lost clean. He doesn't deserve a rematch. You know, you can't really dispute that. You can't really dispute that as a hardcore wrestling fan.
Yeah.
You know?
No, absolutely.
So I
think
that's the route they're going to go.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
But yeah.
In other news, Bloomberg today and the Wall Street Journal, Pat, are reporting that apparently Vince McMahon is asking for, like, a ridiculous asking price for WWE that it exceeds its market value. Now, according to the Wall Street Journal and Bloomberg reports this week, Vince McMahon is seeking as high as a $9 billion figure for the sale of World Wrestling Entertainment. The report this week also states that WWE have received several offers, though the names of the interested parties are private, with WWE declining to comment further. Again, not trying to pretend to be an economics professor or business school professor, but during the early stages of a sale, when there's a tender note, obviously that's not allowable to publish what the company name is until at least there's a definitive tender offer. One thing is a tender note and a tender offer. We'll find out, obviously, if that information ever comes to fruition, but obviously currently that will not be privy to the public. Now, apparently, Bloomberg and the Wall Street Journal are stating that Vince McMahon is asking for a $9 billion asking price, which is actually 37% greater than the company's current market value of $6.5 billion. Vince McMahon recently reinstated himself as executive chairman in January to, quote, oversee the strategic review of the company. Again, per the Wall Street Journal and Bloomberg, the $9 billion sale price might be a challenge for Vince McMahon, especially with the state of the global economy and rising interest rates. The report states today, quote, a valuation of $9 billion amounts to about 7 times the company's $1.29 billion in sales last year, and 23 times its adjusted operating income, which, again, folks, is just to be very clear, again, what's the adjusted operating income as opposed to the gross operating income are two different things. Obviously, the gross operating income is obviously pre-tax. The adjusted is basically when you look at your paycheck, folks, that's your net income. So just a little clarification for our audience. Before depreciation and amortization, both at the high end for the entertainment industry, McMahon is still the controlling shareholder in the company, which has seen the shares rise by 29% alone this year. Thank the Lord, because I was fucking waiting for that shit to happen. Partly due to the speculation of the sale of the company. Pat, your thoughts here on a lot of this economic mumbo-jumbo here reported this week by the Wall Street Journal and Bloomberg News. I hope Pat's still with us here. Pat? Okay, I don't know what happened.
Good for Vince. Good for
Pat,
Vince.
Pat, what's up? Well, yeah, of course.
Good for Vince. That's good shit, pal.
It is. It is. I mean, it's we'll see if he can get that dollar value. I mean, again, WWE is as profitable as it's ever been.
He deserves it, bro. He deserves it. He deserves it. He deserves it.
No,
for
no,
building,
I get it.
A behemoth. You know? Something so stupendous. He deserves it.
Listen, it's hard to match. It's hard to match what a global conglomerate WWE has been under the auspices of Vince McMahon. So, I mean, I think you can make the case that next to Apple or Google or Amazon, dude, on a global level, no one's had the longevity of a Vince McMahon or the profitability of a Vince McMahon. So it'll be interesting, though, man. Again, you can't blame a business owner for inflating the asking price of something they're going to sell. Again, folks, this is not news here. Okay, you don't need an MBA from Rutgers Business School. to know this, but interesting to see this on the Wall Street Journal front page today, also on Bloomberg News. Well, wait and see. Let's see if Vince can get this sale off the ground, and if he gets that asking price. Pat, if he gets even anywhere half of that, that's still a win for Vince, no matter how you slice it.
No, absolutely, man. I mean, look, dude, the way that they could, you know, license it, everything that they could do, the merchandising, like, you're going to make a ton of money, man. And you're gonna make a ton of money over a long period of time because there's generations of a fan base. So it's going to be something else. But, yeah, man, I hope he gets it, you know. Vince deserves it. Vince is one of the greatest Americans that ever lived. Okay? He's one of the greatest Americans that ever lived. Vince, Gravedigger, Jesus, like those are three of some of the greatest Americans that ever lived. So
well,
I hope Vince gets it.
Well, remember, man, Jesus was born in Nazareth over in the Middle East, so I don't know if he's really qualified as an American.
Nazareth, Pennsylvania.
There you go.
Pennsylvania.
There you go. Folks, the ratings this week, interesting though, Pat, let's start off with Raw, like we usually do. 1.81 this week, slightly down from the previous week of 1.87. You know, down from the previous week, 2.14. January 23rd was 2.3. That's been so much the peak this year in 2023. We started the year in January with 1.605, then January 9th, 1.693, dipped down to 1.489 on Martin Luther King Day. January 23rd, 2.3. Again, January 30th, 2.1, 1.87, 1.81. Kind of a fluctuation, though, man. Again, on the road to WrestleMania, good Raws. If you're being intellectually honest, you can't complain. They've been good Raws. And again, after Elimination Chamber tomorrow night, the road to WrestleMania continues. Raw will undoubtedly continue. You know, it'll be high up there. It'll be in the twos, man. The days of Raw being back in the three and a half, not to say it's not possible, Pat. It's just television consumption has just changed a lot. And I think that the way people consume wrestling is very different now. So, again, this is not me being a hater. I'm just looking at the math realistically. Again, if Raw's back in the twos, that's where it should be. That's what it's going to be. It's not a bad thing.
Yeah, I mean, look, you know, people are going to watch Monday Night Raw. We're on the road to WrestleMania, so you're going to just get steady viewership. Everybody's going to want to see who comes out. You know they're going to go big. Last week's Raw, I'll tell you, man, that was a hell of a show. That segment with Cody and Sammy, the way they just handled it, then it led into Cody having a match, you know, and just everything that they did. Like, it was just perfect stuff. Perfect, perfect stuff. More importantly, the crowd was hot for it. The crowd was hot for it, and that's all you want. And, I mean, they shaved off, like, a half an hour total with, like, that, with that entire, like, segment from Sammy coming out, having it go full circle with the Corbin thing, turning it into a match with Cody and Corbin. I mean, bro, yeah, they almost went, like, 30, 40 minutes with the whole thing, and it was great. It was compelling stuff. So I expect more of that. And I just think that, like, no matter what, people are still going to tune in because it's Monday Night Raw, you know? Numbers might go up and down, but this time of year, man, they're like you said, they're going to keep that steady number, you know, high ones, you know, twos. And that's it. That's really what they're going to end up doing, like low twos, high one, you know, high ones. That's basically where they're going to be at for now. You know, if The Rock comes back or if The Rock makes an appearance, then we're talking, you know, definitely higher number. But, yeah, dude, they're doing a great job over there. They're going to maintain that number, no doubt in my mind.
Certainly. Moving on to Dynamite on Wednesday. Big concern, man. Big concern. Again, I watch Dynamite every week. I'm one of these loyal idiots that watches it just because it's entertaining. A lot of shit that I laugh at, like this week with the 8-man tag. The Texas Tornado match where everybody was bleeding. I mean, I just watch it because it's entertaining. That's it, you know. Someone say, oh, well, why do you – listen, I can still watch something I criticize. It doesn't matter. I do it all the time. But this past Wednesday night, man, 827,000 down from the previous week. February 8th was 899,000. February 1st was 901,000. January 25th was 1.003 million. Certainly that was the Jay Briscoe tribute show in the main event. Obviously Jay Briscoe against Jay Lethal. And then on January 18th was 969,000 for Dynamite Pack. Previous week of that, in January, 967,000. So far, only 1 week of barely a million, and that was last month due to the tribute to Jay Briscoe. But bad numbers here, man. 827,000. I get it. You know, it's the NBA. If you notice, NCAA conference games are heating up. March Madness is about 2 weeks away. The NCAA tournament, the hockey, NBA. You know, all my teams are playing. There's a lot to watch on television. The Dynamite kind of sinking, though, dude, as they lead into, let's be honest, Revolution coming to you from the Chase Center in downtown San Francisco coming up in March. I don't know, Pat. It's not a good omen here, man. Leading into one of your first pay-per-view of 2023, some bad ratings here.
Yeah. It's funny. I was actually just taking a look at Twitter just to see if there were any updates on any news. And Glenn Gilberti, the great Disco Inferno, at The Real Disco on Twitter, give him a follow if you don't already, tweeted, wrestling has lost 80% of the audience in the past 20 years, and all that is left are trolls and nerds. Sounds about right. Sounds about right. You know what I mean? Sounds about right. We don't fall into either category here. None of our listeners do, and we certainly don't. But that's a pretty nice little piece of wisdom from Disco there. As far as Dynamite goes, man, I mean, you know, I feel like I'm still beating that dead horse with this thing, you know, just with a stick. And, you know, just various weapons over and over again. But, like, dude, they fumbled any opportunity that they had for momentum. They fumbled every single opportunity that they had for anybody to give a rat's ass about them. Once CM Punk went, the ratings went, okay? And, you know, once that shit went down at All Out and people tuned in anticipating that there was going to be something interesting, who knows what could have happened, like, I don't know, something unpredictable, and we tuned in and Tony Khan basically relinquished titles and suspended people and just had a very tame, blah episode of Dynamite, everything is trended downward. Everything. You know? They could have turned Punk coming back into something huge, dude. I mean, they could have gotten months, maybe even a year's worth of storylines out of that thing. And especially with MJF coming back and everything else with him winning that, you know, his return was not good. I think his return could have been done better too. But Tony Khan just continues to, like, miss these opportunities, and wrestling fans are kind of just growing just, like, less and less interested with the product. Like, they have their niche audience. They have their fan base. They have their 800,000 or 700 or 600,000. Like, they have that locked in, you know, and they're going to keep tuning in. The problem is that they still do not grow their audience. They still do not do compelling television to get people to tune in. And I know that them kind of doing more of the soap opera storytelling is them going against their credo, you know, kind of shooting themselves in the foot, you know. But you got to understand, man, the only way people are going to get invested is through characters. And if there's anything that he can learn from this whole bloodline business is that people will be invested in characters. But, well, again, more on that later. I just think that even with MJF as champion, even with his great promo ability, even with him and Danielson in a good main event in a wrestling match, it's just lost its shine. It's just lost its shine. It's lost its luster. And the only people that still tune in are hardcores. And I think that it's just going to stay that way until it either dies or gets bought out by Vince McMahon. you know? And that's just all there is to it now, because there's nothing positive in their programming that makes me believe that they're going to trend upward. You know what I mean? And again, every opportunity that they've had to make the product hot, to run with a hot hand, to do something cool, to, you know, Wardlow, this guy's super over, man. This guy, you know, he's our own fucking guy, and the fans love him, and he's over, and he's believable. And then, you know, Wardlow earns his shot to challenge for any title, and he's like, I want the TNT title, not the world title. What? You just made this guy look like a jerk-off. You just made this guy look like a jerk-off, because if he's mowing through everybody, he should be challenging for the world title, without question.
But, oh, I'm with you.
Again,
I'm with
stuff
you.
Like that.
I'm with you.
And look at the Acclaimed. Like, the Acclaimed is the only thing I will give him credit for. He did that great, okay? But, you know, now they lost to the Guns, and even they've kind of lost their shine. Even they've kind of lost their luster. And this Soraya Tony Storm thing, not the freeloaders or whatever the fuck they're called. But, like,
well, basically,
I don't know.
The freelancers, yeah. Might as well just call
the freelancers. There you go. But you get what I'm saying. Like, it's just like you don't want to watch it. Like, you watch it, I think, out of habit now. You watch it because you love wrestling. You fucking watch anything. And I can say that. I can say that without question. You genuinely love wrestling. You do. You love the art of professional wrestling.
Yeah, I watch Impact.
I
watch Impact on Thursday nights. I watch New Japan
for
the hour show that they have on Access. I'm not as an aficionado as you are with New Japan. I mean, you know New Japan stuff in your sleep. I don't know it that well. I try to read up on it because I like to be educated on stuff. I'll watch MLW when possible. I certainly will watch NWA when possible.
Love wrestling.
Tyrus is the NWA World Heavyweight Champion. Do I love seeing him on Fox every night on Gutfeld? Of course. He has the NWA World title on Fox News every night. Like, that's great, but that's me. But I watch all wrestling, so I try to watch as much as I can. Do I think all the wrestling is good? Of course not. Like, you know, I watch Dynamite, and, you know, I'll sit through Power Slap afterwards because I'm doing work at home. So I'll watch it too.
Yeah, no, man, you like wrestling. That Power Slap shit, though, I tried. I watched it for, like, 2 minutes, and I was just like, I feel like I'm losing more brain cells than they are. You know what I mean? Like, it just, I don't know, man. It's not cool. Those dudes, like, the concussions they get, like, it's just fucking awful, man.
What do you expect from
a guy like Dana White? But, I mean, you know, you like wrestling, so you'll tune in and you'll watch because you like wrestling. But for me, dude, like, I gotta want to watch. Like, there's got to be something making me want to watch, because bro, I've watched so much fucking wrestling in my life, and I've wrestled, and I've seen so many different types of wrestling from all around the fucking world. And now when I watch it, like, I don't even watch it as much for the wrestling. Like, I appreciate a good match. I appreciate good technique. I appreciate good in-ring psychology, but I watch it more so for the stories, like how they're going to get me interested with their characters, you know? And that's the thing that I appreciate the most. But there's just nobody there. Like MJF is just the little blip in the radar that just, like, you know, okay, let's see what he's going to say, you know, and let's see this guy's rap. And that's really it. That's really it. Because nobody cares if this guy's going to come out or the other guy's going to. I mean, Adam Cole, bro, like, I know we talk about him quite a lot, but, like, you know, off the air, you and I, but, like, this guy, like, he could have meant so much more to them. He could have meant so much more to that company. And they botched his fucking return. They botched his debut and his fucking return. I mean, like, fucking nuts. Nuts. And I feel for the guy. I feel for the guy. I hope whatever it is that's plaguing him, I hope he's able to overcome it, you know? And I hope that he's able to wrestle for that fan base because they really love him. They really appreciate him.
Sure.
But, I mean, like, again, every opportunity that Tony Khan has to bring in a guy that's over, that's got some buzz, or something's going on, or, you know, he's over for that audience and we can grow him from here, like, he just fucking fumbles it. Where's Bryan Danielson? Bryan Danielson's going to be in the main event, and I could give a rat's ass. I mean, like, bro, to do that, like, you got to be booking bad TV, man. You've got to be booking bad TV. And that's the thing, man. There's no incentive for me to watch. So, and I just see it trending downward. I don't think there's any more hope. Even if you bring back Punk, even if you have Punk come back as a heel and beat the shit out of MJF and turn MJF face or whatever, like, even if you did some shit like that, it's still not going to help. It's still not going to help.
Hey, listen, even signing Jay White, which is a possibility for AEW, that's still not going to – and I love Jay White. Believe me, I'm as big a mark for Jay White as anybody. But it's not gonna help either,
I think. What's the allure? Can you explain it to me?
Well, I'll just say this. You know, for all the jokes we talk about off the air about Adam Cole and his size and all that, you can't – like, it's, you look at Jay White, he's believable. He's in great shape. Great worker, in my opinion. Again, you're the worker here, so you can critique it better than I can, obviously. I think he's a good worker, but I think he cuts great promos. He's a good heel. Listen, he checks off boxes. Now, again, as many boxes that you need to check off for you, Pat, I don't know, but I would just say that I think he's – now, again, he's not going to help the problem. He's not going to help the ratings problem in AEW. You could sign Jay White tomorrow and have him challenge, you know, the winner of MJF and Danielson at Revolution. You can put him into the title picture. I mean, let's be honest. I mean, that Fatal 4-Way back in June, that Forbidden Door with Jay White and Adam Cole and the other guys, that was a good match. I mean, for all intents and purposes. I like Jay White. Again, I don't know what's going to become of him. If he goes to WWE, do you fine-tune that character? What do you do with him? Because he's a name. He's not, you know, he's not the name that other people are, but I mean,
we're all, aren't we all names? Don't we all have names?
Well, sure.
Yeah.
Of course. I just think that, I don't know, man, you know, we talk about, well, you look at a guy, is he committed to his craft? Is he believable? You look at Jay White, you look at this guy, you run into him in a fucking dark alley. You're like, yo, this guy legitimately looks like he could kick the shit out of me. You know, he looks like a badass, as opposed to, like, I know we always talk about Adam Cole, and you're like, you know, if you ran into Adam Cole down on Bergen Line Avenue, you wouldn't be scared at all if Adam Cole was threatening you on Bergen Line, you know? So, you know, you look at Jay White, I just think he's believable. He's a good worker. I know you don't like the cheap heat that he does with his promos because he curses a lot, but, I mean, I don't know, man. At this point, I think he's a talented guy. Would he benefit more going to WWE? Of course. I think Tony Khan would rip him.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's just me. But yeah, Dynamite's really, really sinking for sure. SmackDown.
Just one more thing on Jay White. Like, so sure. Jay White, you know, to your point, like, he has the look. Dude, I've been watching Jay White wrestle since he would do dark matches or undercard matches in Ring of Honor when he had blonde hair, when he was like this kid from New Zealand, very generic look. Like, you know, trying to bulk up, like, just kind of clean cut, you know, baby face. And he definitely had something to him. You know, even then, you could see, like, yo, there's something to this kid. You know, he had size. He was a tall dude. You know, obviously, he got a lot bigger in time. His physique really developed. You know, the talking, he can get his point across. I'm just not a fan of the cheap heat. I'd say Ospreay is honestly a better talker than he is. I think Ospreay is a more passionate talker. That promo that he had with Kenny, even though he cursed in that, bro, that what he said to Omega was just gold. I mean, it was amazing, and it was real. It wasn't him like pretending to be a wrestler, or, you know, pretending to be a fucking tough guy. Like, he was shooting, and that's how it came across. But Jay White is definitely a guy that I think could benefit from WWE. Do I see star quality in him right now? Like mid-card kind of, like, not WrestleMania main event kind of guy yet, even though I will say, and for anybody that's listening, check out his match with Okada at Wrestle Kingdom at the beginning of this year. Unbelievable match. I know a lot of people say Kenny and Ospreay was the match of the night. I'm sorry, I disagree. I think that and the Zack Sabre Jr. match were probably the best matches, but Okada and Jay White were just amazing. Amazing. And Jay White was great in that match. His facials, as far as working goes, yeah, he is a great worker. You know, he's got great ring positioning, great timing. His facial expressions, his selling, he's awesome. He's fucking awesome. But again, just the character thing, like, I don't know. It's not there for me yet. But he would be a great signing for WWE. I think he could take his career to the next level there. If he goes to AEW, what are you going to do with him? What are you going to, what, you going to make him the top babyface? Because that's what they need right now, realistically, you know? Which I got to say, bringing back Adam Cole, major cock tease, bro. Because, like, this is a dude that you could have built up to challenge MJF for the title as a babyface, and he would have been super over with that crowd, you know? Yep. But they botched it. They botched it. But, yeah, you know, wherever Jay White ends up, he's going to be something somewhere, but I think he's better off going to WWE.
No, I'm with you for sure. Absolutely. I think that would be the smart move for him, definitely. Moving to SmackDown here to round out our ratings talk here. Not a surprise, you know, last week, 2.46. Previous week to start February, 2.384. End of January, 2.54. January 20th, 2.25. January 13th, 2.3. And the first Friday of the year, 2.25. You know, high. Early twos, sometimes mid twos. Again, it's what you're expecting out of SmackDown on Fox. Obviously, some things change when it comes to maybe conference tournament time in the NCAA for men's basketball. Certainly, again, with baseball coming back, thank God, pitchers and catchers report this week. Baseball will be back soon. You know, again, SmackDown's as strong as it is. You know, again, the Bloodline storyline. It's almost like, and we talked about this off the air, it's like the Bloodline storyline is so compelling, though, dude. It almost you sometimes forget there's other things going on SmackDown. And I think sometimes people forget about it. Not to say that it's forgotten. No, of course not. No one's forgetting about Gunther and how amazing Gunther is. No one's forgetting about the tag team division with the Usos recently defending the titles. The hell of a match last week. No one's forgetting about, you know, the other acts and the other workers on SmackDown. So good numbers going into tonight, I'm sure, in Montreal, going into tomorrow night's Elimination Chamber match. The suspense, the intrigue about what's going on with the Bloodline, I think, continues. And, you know, no surprise there. Again, will it track threes again? I don't know. Tough to say, but on the road to WrestleMania, you never know.
Yeah, I mean, look, dude, you know, they're firing on all cylinders right now. It's must-see television. It's the best wrestling program out there. Everybody's invested in what's happening. And, you know, in between all of that, you got a lot of great talent that's really starting to blossom, really starting to come into their own. You know, Gunther is a guy that, you know, we constantly put over on this show. You know, he's a dude that's really starting to blossom, really starting to get out there. I don't know if you've seen, but one of the latest rumors now for him and for his WrestleMania matchup is Brock Lesnar, and it might be for the Intercontinental title. That's a matchup I really want to see. I mean, that's a matchup that when, you know, he came up, a lot of people were already fantasy booking that. So, you know, in between just the Bloodline, I mean, they got a lot of good stuff there. You know, they got Charlotte Flair. You know, her and Rhea are going to probably, you know, have something going on sometime soon. You know, so, I mean, they got a lot of good stuff happening. And I just think that, you know, it's all trending in the right direction. And they're going to keep that number steady, man. They're going to keep that number steady.
No, definitely. Definitely without question. I think, you know, listen, you know, on the road to WrestleMania, we're going to see a lot of good traffic, I think, moving forward. Pat, our main event this week. Certainly predicated, I think, on a very interesting soundbite from Eric Bischoff, the former president of WCW. Certainly a very successful podcast, 83 Weeks, that he does with Conrad Thompson. I know he makes guest appearances on other shows. I know he's been on Keeping It 100 a lot lately with Disco and Conan, which is nice. You know, definitely a good back and forth since that was their former boss. And I think it's good to see them sort of shoot the breeze and collaborate a little bit and dissect what's going on in wrestling. You know, Bischoff this week got a lot of people in the internet wrestling community triggered when he went on to say, quote, the Bloodline storyline is better than anything the NWO storyline ever was. Which got me thinking, I know we talked about it off the air, I think our main event this week is, what are the best storylines in pro wrestling history for us? And I'll go first here with my top five. I don't want to start dissecting it too much. I'll just put it out there. And then, you know, obviously we'll bounce things off each other. But in no particular order, I would just say the top five storylines I remember in my lifetime, and I'm a little older than you are, so I've been watching wrestling a little bit longer, but, you know, Hogan and Andre in 1987, if you go on YouTube and watch that program leading into WrestleMania 3, again, folks, there was no Monday Night Raw. Superstars was taped on the weekend. It was in syndication. You know, that's what we lived on. You know, there's no dirt sheets. There's no internet. But that whole storyline, that the months and months of Hogan and Andre, you know, Andre turning heel, turning on Hogan, the program leading into it, the emotional contract signing, the match at WrestleMania, Andre 15 years undefeated, never, ever got pinned. I mean, what a great storyline. And let's be honest, even after Mania, for a full calendar year, Hogan and Andre feuded at the inaugural Survivor Series in 1987 on Thanksgiving night. Hogan had his team. Andre had his team of five. Andre went over. We saw what happened on February the 5th in Indianapolis in 88. Andre went in the title. You know, it led to the tournament at Trump Plaza that year at WrestleMania 4. That was great storytelling for a year and a half. You know, we never really got an ending to it. But again, one of the best storylines I can remember in my lifetime. Next, I would say Austin versus McMahon. My goodness, we're talking about 3.5 years almost that completely won the war for Vince McMahon. You know, in all the years that he was trailing Eric Bischoff, the 83 weeks, whatever. You know, guess what? Vince took a chance, put all his chips in the middle of the table with Austin, and that feud was the hottest thing I can remember in quite some time. It was Austin the Rebel, Vince McMahon, the evil promoter, the evil Mr. McMahon. My God, dude, if that didn't symbolize the Attitude Era, and that's what got them over WCW, that's what got them to win the war, the Monday Night War. Austin McMahon, you want to tune in every Monday night to see who got the upper hand. Hey, one week Vince got the upper hand, the next week Austin did. But by and large, Austin got over. The payoffs were amazing. That feud was... My God, you couldn't just again, as you said before, the greatest heel in the history of pro wrestling, not even debatable, Vincent Kenny McMahon, and he needed a guy that was comparable to him, the most over guy in the history of the business, Austin. I mean, it just Austin McMahon, another amazing storyline. Next, I would say the Mega Powers. You know, for the longest time, Hogan was world champ, Macho was Intercontinental champ. You know, there's always that tease of the two big stars. We saw what happened in late 87, going to 88, Macho turned face. Hogan lost the title to Andre. Macho won the tournament in Trump Plaza in Atlantic City, an unprecedented 4 victories in one night. Has never been done again, really, in World Wrestling Federation history and WWE history also. The drama of him and Macho and forming the Mega Powers, defeating the Mega Bucks at SummerSlam, the inaugural SummerSlam, at Madison Square Garden in August of 88, on a Monday night, no less, because that's when SummerSlam used to be on, coincidentally. You know, the tension, you knew that eventually it was going to boil over. It did. The Mega Powers exploded in Milwaukee. In February of 89, the Mega Powers exploded. Macho turned on them. I mean, really great year and a half storyline buildup of Hogan getting the title back, the title that, frankly, he never lost cleanly. To Andre the year before. Great storyline there, great drama, getting Elizabeth involved. I think it was great television. And again, for a time there was no internet, there was no YouTube. You know, we relied solely on superstars and wrestling challenge on the weekends. It was great, great storytelling, culminating at WrestleMania 5. And afterwards, Hogan went on to other things, made movies. Macho became the Macho King. Great storytelling. Second, I would say the NWO. I would say, listen, in April of, well, May of 1996, when Scott Hall showed up on Nitro, my God, that was, I mean, earth-shaking for us. And again, the internet was still in its infancy. It was not, we didn't have YouTube yet. We didn't have, you know, social media. Not really dirt sheets the way we have them today. But, you know, Hall appearing in May, the next month at the Great American Bash, Hall and Nash, Hogan turning heel for the better part of 1996, the best storyline in pro wrestling. I mean, that's why Bischoff was beating Vince McMahon. For the totality of it, Pat, you know, the NWO got stale and somewhere in mid to late 97 as they were building the Hogan Sting storyline and the payoff, at Starrcade. We all know about 98, the two factions, the Wolfpack and NWO Black and White. 99, they reformed after Hogan won the title back. Eventually, it would lead to Jeff Jarrett, Bret Hart, and the Outsiders reforming NWO 2000. For the most part, you know, it got stale, but the early NWO was amazing in 96. I mean, that's why you tuned in on Mondays. Again, and I felt bad for Shawn Michaels. He was the World Wrestling Federation champion. But, I mean, how are you going to compete on Monday nights with fucking Hall and Nash and Hogan raising havoc, you know, breaking kayfabe almost, you know? It was amazing. But, again, for the most part, in 96, that version of the NWO, that storyline. And, bro, the bloodline. It's been 2.5 years of Roman Reigns turning heel, joining with Heyman, getting his family on board, the feud with Jey Uso at Hell in a Cell, Jimmy coming back, you know, family. We saw what happened, obviously, with getting Solo on board after, well, I mean, even during that, you know, Sami Zayn joining the feud, the faction, excuse me, compelling. And, folks, the television ratings will tell you, Roman's not on TV sometimes, and guess what? When Sammy's on, the ratings are still very strong. So clearly Sammy is as over as anybody in pro wrestling. That bloodline storyline has been amazing. Just because Sammy got kicked out of the bloodline doesn't mean that the bloodline is just going to disintegrate. You have a lot of family members. You have Jacob Fatu in MLW. You have Umaga's kid, who apparently I think is off parole and starting to train now. You have other members in the Fatu family. I mean, it's not like the bloodline's going to run out of people, but the way this has been done, Pat, this is better than Melrose Place. This is better than General Hospital. It's been the best episodic storyline, I would say, in my adult life. And those are my thoughts.
Wow. Man, hold on. Holy shit. I got to follow that up. Fucking hell, man. You know, I got to put you over on that one. That was, wow. Okay, well, mine obviously is a little different. And again, you know, given my age and stuff like that, you remember when wrestling went from black and white to color. I don't. But I kind of put together, I just put this list together on the fly, by the way. You know, I had an idea. We had talked about it, I know. But I had an idea, and then I was, you know, going into today's episode, I'm like, you know what, throwing it out the window. Let me just call it on the fly. So, first of all, love your list. I think it's great. I think you definitely, you know, took me for a walk down memory lane, especially talking about, you know, all the older stuff that happened, all the older stuff. You remember the stuff from the 80s, you know, the 90s and stuff like that. But, like, for me, you know, I watched wrestling when I was maybe 3-4 years old. But I don't fucking remember that. I was busy shitting my pants and fucking, you know, doing writing on the wall and fucking eating whatever my parents were feeding me and fucking living off their tit, shooting blanks, you know, fucking great life. But the first, and again, this is no particular order, right? But the first real feud. And you know what? I'm going to throw in an honorable mention for mine, okay? So this is the first real feud that I actually remember that, like, really, really, really captivated me. The other ones, obviously, I saw, like, later on VHS and stuff. But Hogan Warrior, because the Ultimate Warrior was my guy. And I just immediately gravitated towards him, like, just the character, just the colors, the, you know, he looked like a comic book character. He's larger than life, you know, and he was really the reason why I loved wrestling, you know, and why I even enjoyed watching it. And, you know, I knew of Hulk Hogan, but for whatever reason, like, Hogan just didn't really vibe with me like the way Warrior did, you know, like I just liked Warrior more. And, you know, that feud, how it came together, you know, title versus title, you know, Toronto, Sky Dome, fucking Robert Goulet, you know, fucking, like, all of this great, great stuff. And just, in my opinion, really one of Hogan's best matches, and Warriors too. I mean, I know these are two guys that get shit on, you know, by the marks for their style and by, you know, people who actually know about wrestling, maybe for the personalities and, you know, their politicking. But you know, those two guys had, like, such an amazing match. And the story they were able to tell, I mean, I watched it recently, and I still fucking love it. I still fucking love it because it's just, it's timeless, you know, and they played to their strengths, and they just, they told such a great story. And then, you know, my guy Warrior goes over, and that was just awesome. That was awesome. That hooked me right there. So that one's my honorable mention. Number five, I'd probably say Rock Austin. Just because, you know, both of those guys, you know, were kind of like the Hogan Macho Man of their era, you know, of the Attitude era. And those are the two big guys that kind of like became the two top dogs. And it was always inevitable, you know, especially after Rocky became the corporate champion, it was just inevitable that those two were going to face each other at some point. And their match at 15 was awesome. Their match at 18, if I recall correctly, was awesome. Obviously, you know, you had the big turn, right? And that one with fucking with Vince, if I recall correctly.
That's right.
Yeah, the turning heel with Vince, you know, that was really big. And then Steve went on to do some great work, you know, like character-wise. But, you know, that feud, that rivalry, and just the way they were. And then, you know, the big match at WrestleMania 19, you know, the big send-off. That was just, like, so, like, just amazing. I mean, these guys were just such huge characters. Steve was so hot at the time. Rocky was so hot at the time. Rocky had done, you know, some stuff in Hollywood, and, you know, he was kind of already trending in that direction of where he was headed, and, you know, Steve putting him over, them having that moment where Rocky, you know, spoke to him, you know, and just all that stuff. I mean, that feud was excellent and definitely one of the best storylines of all time. Then at number four, I got the NWO, man. You know, I like the NWO. I was more of a WWF guy, but I liked the NWO. I liked what was happening. I liked Hogan turning heel. I thought it was interesting. I thought it was creative. It was bold. It was daring. I mean, it was just fucking awesome. The good parts of it, I say, went maybe about under a year. The stuff with Sting, I thought was fucking great. You know, Crow Sting, all that stuff that happened, the fake Sting, you know, just everything I'd say like within like the first year and a half to 2 years was really, really good shit. But really for me, more than anything else, I think what made it good was Hogan turning and the fact that you had two guys from WWF at the time that showed up in WCW and nobody knew what it was. And I remember me and a lot of kids like my age were all thinking that it was going to be WWF versus WCW. Like, that's what we really thought. So we were kind of all just really tuning in to see what other guys from WWF were going to show up on WCW. Wasn't really great character work. There wasn't really a lot of development. Nobody really got made. It was just, it kind of became a clique of like all older wrestlers and just, I don't know, it got a little out of hand. And Sting was already a main event guy in WCW, so it didn't really do anything bigger. Goldberg was a runaway freight train. I mean, him beating Hogan was good, but, you know, didn't really do much in the long term because Goldberg was just going to be Goldberg anyway. But certainly something that got over, I think all of us still fucking mark out for to this day. You know, I'd say about each one of us owns at least one NWO shirt, red or black, red or white. So, you know, definitely something that for marketing, I mean, fuck, man, I'm sure Kevin Nash is happy and, you know, and Hogan. So, you know, it's definitely turned into money, you know, over a long period of time. But for me, in retrospect, not really the most compelling thing now, you know, like when I look back at it, it was kind of just, I think everybody was anticipating that invasion angle, you know, and everybody thought that was going to be it. And then we got it. And well, that's a whole other subject. But number three, I got Bret and Shawn. Bret and Shawn to me was one of the best storylines. Everything that they did, all the stuff that just led up to the Survivor Series, Sean's promos, Brett's promos, Sean's behavior, you know, Sean talking shit to Brett. And just really, I think the thing that made it compelling to me watching it was, you know, obviously I was a fan of both wrestlers. I thought both wrestlers were great, but, you know, I was more of a Sean fan. I thought Sean was an immense piece of shit back then, which I was just like, this guy's, you know, a fucking scumbag heel, and I love him. But really just the thing that made it, like, interesting was, like, it was really blurring the lines. And people knew, you know, and I think, you know, me, my friends, you know, all of us on AOL back in the day, we all knew that they legitimately hated each other and that they had gotten into a fight. I mean, like, we had just followed all the dirt sheet stories. And I think that one, I think that storyline more than anything else was really the one that got, like, the dirt sheets involved. I think it was really the one that did it. You know what I mean? Like, now it's kind of commonplace for the dirt sheets to be involved and to tip shit off in a storyline or, you know, kind of like be in on it, so to speak. But, like, that was really the first big one that really fucking did it. And, you know, again, that match of Survivor Series and everything that went down there, I just think it was just incredibly interesting. And I was hooked. And even though WCW was kind of runaway train, by that point, I had kind of just been like, you know, I just want to see the cruiserweights, because the cruiserweights are really what interested me, you know. The NWO stuff, it was cool, but it was just like, I don't know. I wasn't as compelled. But that Sean Brett thing, man, that Sean Brett storyline, like, that really, really hooked me. And I had to watch Monday Night Raw. Like, whether I recorded it, you know, back in the day, you know, all of us with our VHS recorders recording, you know, the shows, you know, or waiting till the rerun of Nitro would come on, you know, afterwards and record it then and watch Raw live. But, you know, I was hooked on that storyline.
I'll let you finish real quick. But when you mentioned that about sort of like the difficulties of watching Raw and Nitro, like, you're right about, you know, if you had to go to work early the next day, sometimes staying up to watch Nitro was a problem because it was on late. It was on, I think, sometimes after midnight, if not 1 a.m. It wasn't always on right after it ended, you know. So it was whatever was on TNT, you know, some series or whatever. Normally, you know, watching wrestling was challenging. Because you had, for example, on Sunday night into Monday morning in the New York area on the MSG network, you got to see ECW. If you had to go to work,
no, it was Saturday. ECW was on Saturdays, Fern.
Saturdays. I remember it was on Saturdays. It did then transition to Sundays into Mondays. And the reason I know this is I remember working where I was working at, you know, at the courthouse in Superior Court for New Jersey. I remember I'd walk in Monday morning kind of annoyed because I'd be like, damn, I was up until 2 a.m. on Sunday into Monday watching it. So watching wrestling was challenging in the late 90s, whether it was ECW, but Nitro especially. If you watched Nitro, then great, you missed Raw unless you recorded it. Unless you had one of those VCRs where you could record while watching something else. Like, that was the shit. Like, that's how you knew people had money, because if you had that VCR, that was the shit. Because normally if you had to record.
Nah,
you
yo. I had to do a bootleg. I'd watch, like, because my mom would go out or something. I'd fucking record Raw or Nitro in my mom's room. And then I would watch one or the other, you know?
So then
when I was done,
exactly.
I'd just rewind it and I'd watch it immediately. Or, like, you know, I'd put it in, like, my, you know, my grandma would come and stay. Yeah, I'd put it in my grandma's room on her VCR, you know? And then I fried it out, and I was like, oh, I don't know how that happened.
Exactly. And again, but those are the challenges of watching wrestling back then, because, like, if you didn't watch Nitro, you had to wait until, like, 1 a.m. to watch it on TNT.
Yeah.
And sometimes for a lot of us, like, again, you know, you have to go to work the next day, and, you know, you didn't want to be up until 3 a.m. watching Nitro. But go on, I'm sorry.
But we were super committed, you know, and the thing about it was, like, both programs had very compelling stuff. Even ECW, you know, like you said, I would do the same thing. I'd stay up to watch it. You know, I was just like, fuck it, I have to watch it, you know, or I would just set it to record. But most of the time I stayed up to watch it because you couldn't miss that hour at ECW. You just couldn't, you know, like something might happen there that you'd be like, oh man, I missed it. But, you know, I mean, unfortunately there's really only one show that does that now. But getting back to the list, Austin Vince. I mean, what can you say about that, dude? What can you really say about that? You know, Vince in 97 becoming the Mr. McMahon character. That was just, you know, kind of planting the seeds, like letting it grow. And then little by little, you know, it started to finally grow. And then, you know, Vince is just this asshole boss, you know, running roughshod over the company. And Steve, this badass motherfucker, overcame all the odds, won the title, broke his dang neck, you know, drank a bunch of beers, you know, all that other stuff. And it was just compelling, man. Like, you had to watch, like, what was going on constantly. And that's really the thing that turned the tide for them, you know. That's really what just, like, what propelled WWE, like, just completely into the stratosphere, you know. Like, it's amongst the fucking greatest of stars. I don't know, whatever these space motherfuckers say. But the point is that it was must-see television. You could not miss it. You know, you always had to see what was going to happen with Austin or Vince. And, you know, it was great stuff, man. It was great, great stuff. And definitely an angle that made a fuck ton of money. I mean, to this day, you know, you're still seeing Austin 316 shirts, you know. Yeah, Steve got himself over another feud, but really the cherry on top is really, you know, the feud with Vince. I mean, because everybody related to that. You know, everybody related to that. You know, everybody wants to beat up their boss, no comment. But everybody wants to beat up their boss, you know? And that rivalry for me was just was amazing. And number one, man, I'm with you, man. I know we said no particular order, but I think we're in agreement that the Bloodline, I mean, that whole thing has been mega compelling. And look, I know we're going to get a lot of heat for this. I know there's going to be people out there that aren't going to like this, and that's fine. You're entitled to feel how you feel. But just hear us out here, you know, because, yeah, we all love the NWO. We all loved Austin Vince. We all loved Bret and Shawn. We all loved Hogan Macho. We all loved Hogan Andre. We all loved all these great matches, you know, Flair, Steamboat, all this stuff. All of them were great. And again, any ones that we missed out there, folks, you know, we're completely sorry, but, you know, these are the ones that mean the most to us in our lifetime. You know?
And
Flair
also,
Steamboat
and Pat,
obviously is a great rivalry, too.
And Pat also, too, I think what we have to distinguish this. And this is important, I think, for a lot of the fans listening to our show, that, you know, the reason Bischoff triggered so many people, because, again, people across the IWC, Twitter, and also social media as well, were like, what's going on with Bischoff? Is he trying to get a job with WWE? Is he trying to – no, he's not. Bischoff is fine. Bischoff financially – he did declare bankruptcy some years ago. He's admitted that. But he's been fine financially. He's not looking for work. He has monetized his podcast. He does really well with Conrad with 83 Weeks. He does other shows with other people. I mean, he's good. I think Bischoff being intellectually honest was refreshing because it's easy for him to get tribal and territorial and say, well, no, the NWO, because it was my idea. Well, not really. He actually bit it off Japan, but that's another story. But the point is that it's easy to fall prey and say, oh, well, it's his idea. He would think he'd be putting that over. And again, to fans, we have to be intellectually honest here. The spring of 96, going into the summer of 96, into the fall, you know, again, going into 97, when Sting was not wrestling, when he was stalking the NWO, that whole year where he show up, jump out of the rafters, jump back up, attack the NWO to eventually set up the match with Hogan. And again, let's put aside how disappointing that match was for factors that have been discussed already to death already by the Dirt Sheets and my podcast and documentaries and books. Going into 97, you know, and then the payoff in 97 with Hogan and Sting at Starrcade and, you know, at the MCI Center in downtown Washington, D.C. Okay, we can make the case that was good NWO. But into 98, moving forward, it just wasn't. With the Bloodline in this entire 2.5 years, there's never been a downtime. There's never been a, moment. No, we can make the case. Again, we have to be intellectually honest, folks. We can make the case that 98 NWO with the Wolfpack. Yeah, we got a song out of it. We got crazy great T-shirts. I have 2 Wolfpack T-shirts. I love Wolves. I donate money to sponsor them with WWF and, you know, Defenders of Wildlife. I love Wolves. But for 98, 99, it wasn't good. It wasn't good. And then in 2000 with Jeff Jarrett, with Bret Hart and the Outsiders, it wasn't good. You know, if you want to say NWO 96 and 97, great. But for the totality of it, it wasn't. Again, it started off with an A grade and moved into a B plus B, but it finished with a D. You can't say that, folks, about the Bloodline. And never at any point in time, and I grade for a living, never at any point in time can you say, oh, wow, the Bloodline was an A plus, and then it kind of downgraded to like a C grade. That's never happened, Patrick.
Nah, man. Not at all, dude. And you know, look, like, I think you summed up a very good chunk of it. I just think that from my perspective, I would say that what the Bloodline angle has been able to do, and, you know, Roman Reigns aligning himself with Paul Heyman. I mean, here's a guy that, you know, had it pretty hard for a while. Had leukemia, which, man, tip of the fucking cap big time to you, you know, was really had a lot of challenges in his life and wasn't really a great promo guy. Like, this was the dude that everybody's like, nah, he's the top guy. I mean, you know, got in there with top guys, got wins over top guys, but the legitimacy, I don't know. There was just something was missing there. You know, like, the crowd was just not buying it yet. You know, and you could look back at that moment with him and John Cena, that moment they had on Monday Night Raw, when him and John Cena are going back and forth in promos. And John Cena, I mean, wiped the floor with him. And John Cena's a good talker. A lot of people out there might not agree with that, you know, but John Cena's a great talker. He knows how to communicate with that crowd. He knows how to get that crowd invested. And that's the most important thing. And John Cena's very good at that. And he got cooked, as the kids say, by John Cena. And Roman left, you know, COVID, all the stuff that happened. And I think he repackaged himself, you know, he fixed his teeth and stuff like that, you know, changed his look. And really just, I think he kind of harnessed, like, what it is that he wants to be. Like, he finally put together the character that we see now on television. And he's like, this is where I'm going. And he went there, and giving him Heyman, I thought, was an excellent idea because Heyman's one of the best talkers of all time. And Heyman could just, I think, kind of be that barrier for his weak point. But now, it's not a weak point. Roman can fucking talk. Roman can talk. Most importantly, when Roman talks, people care. They care a lot, okay? That's a little, you know, call back to Faith No More there. But they do. They care a lot, okay? And Roman, with Paul Heyman, has become a great talker. The Usos, that the match with Jay while Jimmy was out, you know, like those matches that they had, you watch those matches back with no crowd. And you watch those matches back now, the emotion that these guys were able to get out of themselves while they were wrestling one another with no fucking crowd there with piped in noise, it's amazing. Those matches were awesome. Then getting the Usos to be what they became, then adding Solo, and then adding Sammy. I mean, like, bro, what great television. And here's the thing about it that can't really say about the NWO is that this entire story, this entire program has been built with backstage vignettes more than anything else. Yeah, you've had promos in the ring. You've had stuff like that. But, dude, this has really grown because of backstage vignettes. So they've presented it like, you know, like if it's a story. I mean, like, this shit's like The Sopranos. I mean, like, the end of that Royal Rumble was amazing. Was amazing. Peak fucking storytelling, dude. Like, people are going to be studying that shit. Kids that are getting into the business are going to be looking back at that shit.
Well, yeah, Survivor Series, too, with the War Games, the Clash of the Castle with, you know, Solo. You know, again, Roman had to travel overseas by himself, right? There was no Heyman. There was no Usos. No Sami Zayn.
Yeah.
You're like, wow, how's Roman going to defeat McIntyre in his home, not country, but region. And what happened? You know, like, boom, Solo Sikoa debuted. Well, on SmackDown. And joined the Bloodline, you know, obviously because we know that they're, you know, he's the Usos' younger brother. It's just, again, and I know this bothers some fans to say this. If you said to me at any point in 2.5 years, there was a downtime in the storyline where it got a little blah, all right, I'll concede the point to you. But the point is that that doesn't exist. With the NWO, and why Bischoff is right, is because there was a lot of downtime in the NWO. Again, I'm going to say, I'm going to repeat it for everybody in the back, because maybe they don't want to hear it, or they're having revisionist history moments. Again, folks, after Sting beat Hogan in an awful finish and the way it was coordinated, you know, once Hogan and Nash broke up and they had the two factions, I mean, okay, yeah, it sold money because of the theme song and the T-shirts. It wasn't great. You know, Ultimate Warrior showing up in the WCW in late 98, you know, that didn't help either. I mean, in 99, when we thought the NWO was dead, guess what? It got resurrected when Hogan, you know, beat Nash after thankfully he beat Goldberg at Starrcade, thank the Lord. You know, and then the NWO got resurrected. Again, it was blah. It's never been blah with the Bloodline. For anyone to say that there's ever been a moment that the Bloodline's been stale, like the way the NWO got stale, they're just either they're not watching the same things we are, or their bias is so ingrained that they're just not going to be able to see beyond it. That's the only logical explanation I can come up with.
Yeah. No, I think that's fair. I also think too that, you know, again, like, because I think of their beliefs and their perspectives, like, they don't look at wrestling for what it completely is. They don't look at what these performers do for what they completely do. It's just the wrestling to them, you know? And you look at the range of emotions that everybody involved in the Bloodline or with that angle have been able to get out of themselves for those matches, for those programs, for those vignettes. It's amazing, dude. It's amazing. They've shown so much range for these characters. And it's peaked. It's peaked and it's worked. And they're making money. And they got catchy shit that's come up in between, you know? Like, all of this entire run as a whole has been better than NWO as a whole. You know? I don't know, man. This is great stuff. This is great stuff. And my only concern, and real quick here, I'll give you the floor right after this, but my only concern is how we get to the payoff, you know, how we get to the payoff and how the payoff is executed. You know what I mean? Because maybe something might change tomorrow night for all we know, but it's looking like it's going to be Cody and Roman, but how you get to that payoff and the payoff itself are really, 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 really big and are going to go a really, really, really big way to really determining like how great this entire story and this entire run for Roman has been.
No, and also, too, again, it doesn't mean that the faction as a whole has to be, you know, eradicated. Again, we have family members that can still be brought in eventually and used down the line. It doesn't mean that you can't resurrect it. Folks, if we've learned anything about factions in all of our years of watching pro wrestling, it doesn't take much to resurrect a faction. It really, really doesn't. Whether it's the Horsemen, whether it's NWO, whether it's, you know, the Dangerous Alliance, whether it is the blood, you know, again, it doesn't mean it's dead in the water with whatever happens tomorrow night, folks, in Montreal, or even moving forward after WrestleMania. Again, we have a family lineage here, I think, that you could still mix and match and plug in some people eventually. You know, even let's say Roman loses to Cody and they say he takes time off, it doesn't mean you can't bring people in. In the meantime, it still not be a viable faction. That's just not the case. It's happened with DX. It's happened with the Horsemen. It's happened with, you know, again, the Dangerous Alliance. It's happened with, you know, just different factions. You can still resurrect them, folks. So it's not the end of the world.
Well, Fern, I'll ask you this. Do you think that Cody needs to go over clean for this run to be successful? For it to really mean something. For it to mean something. Do you think Cody has to go over clean?
I think so, yes. I think if you want that wholesome moment that he won the title his father never did. It's got to be a clean win. Any chicanery or something questionable or, you know, again, like, I love that Daniel Bryan won the title in 2014, but he didn't beat the champion. He beat Batista, right? So if you want to nitpick at things, you know, he won the match. He got that WrestleMania moment, but was the champion defeated? No. When Benoit beat Triple H, well, I'm just saying, when Benoit beat Triple H.
Bro, he tapped out Drax the Destroyer. He tapped out Drax the Destroyer.
No, I know.
How cool is that? Okay.
No, of course. But what I'm saying is that you know, Benoit beat Triple H. He beat the champ. You know what I'm saying? Like, I think Cody needs a clean win, and I think that's hopefully we'll see if we get that. Pat, before we call it a night here, again, as we're about to wrap up on this day in wrestling history, today being the 17th of February, my goodness, some really, really great things going on this day. In 1996, Raven defeated the Sandman to retain the ECW World Heavyweight title in the main event of ECW CyberSlam 96 from the hallowed grounds of the ECW Arena in Philadelphia. Going on also, Psycho Sid won his second WWF World title by defeating Bret the Hitman Hart with outside interference from Stone Cold Steve Austin on Monday Night Raw, where somehow he had Sid in the sharpshooter. The referee did not see, Earl Hebner did not see Austin hitting Bret on the top of the head of
he's
the chair.
He's getting screwed again.
And, you know, obviously that would set up him and Austin at WrestleMania. That would set up Sid and Taker for the title as well. In 1998, the Headbangers defeated the Rock and Roll Express to win the NWA World Tag Team titles at a Monday Night Raw in Waco, Texas. In 2002 on this day, Hulk Hogan, Kevin Nash, and Scott all returned to the WWF at No Way Out in Milwaukee. It was a historic moment, obviously, after Vince McMahon had bought out WCW the year before. We had a horrible invasion angle. We both know that Hogan, Hall, Nash, Goldberg, all these other stars that were signed to WCW under the old Time Warner contracts were not going to be bought out by Vince. They were going to sit out their contracts, come back eventually. They did what almost to a hero's welcome. Hogan came back to at No Way Out along with Hall and Nash. And it was amazing. You know, Hogan would go on to win the Undisputed Championship that spring against Triple H. Obviously Stone Cold would go over against Scott Hall at Mania. Just a lot of good stuff that went on from that. Certainly in 2008 at No Way Out in Las Vegas, Floyd Money Mayweather was sitting in the front row to support his friend Rey Mysterio, who did not defeat Edge for the World Heavyweight title. But at the end, the Big Show came out to ringside to sort of try to antagonize Floyd Mayweather. And that's what got that famous broken nose segment. You know, if it wasn't for Floyd breaking his nose, that segment may not have taken off and had that big payoff at WrestleMania that year in Orlando in 2008. And also on this day in wrestling history in 2013, The Rock retained the WWE Championship against CM Punk in the main event of the Elimination Chamber pay-per-view in New Orleans. Jack Swagger would also go on to win the Elimination Chamber match to set up the World Heavyweight title match at WrestleMania 29 here at MetLife Stadium in New Jersey against Alberto Del Rio. And, of course, those were great things going on this day, the 17th of February, in pro wrestling history. Pat, before we call it a day, any big things coming up for you, brother?
Well, one thing is I'd really like to see the Elimination Chamber be able to, like, spin, you know, kind of like the thing on the fucking gun that spins, whatever the fuck it's called, that thing. I'd like to see the Elimination Chamber spin, you know, and then when the opponent's number is up, the door opens and you got motherfuckers dizzy, like, going into the match. That'd be kind of interesting, you know. But anyways, that's just me. I got a couple jokes for you before I go. You want to hear them?
Absolutely.
Okay, so you like the Netflix show You, right?
Of course, bro. Who doesn't? Yes.
Okay, well, I know why you like it. It's because you can blame Goldberg for everything in it, you know? And I'm going to leave you with an oldie. This next one's an oldie, okay? How much cocaine has Charlie Sheen done?
Not more than the cocaine bear, apparently.
Enough to kill 2.5 men.
Oh, my God. Folks, you got to love the PBR superstar. My goodness, you got to love him. You have to love you have to.
I'm
love
here
him.
All weekend,
you
folks.
You have to love
I'm
him.
Here all weekend, folks.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, again, as a reminder, coming up on Monday at 6 p.m. Eastern time, I will be having the latest edition of Real Talk via Jersey First TV. Special programming note, folks, Jersey First TV will be joining Verizon Fios coming up on April the 1st. So for those of you that subscribe to Verizon Fios, you'll get to see myself as well as all the other great talent at Jersey First TV. Certainly Elizabeth Nader, the host of The Nader Narrative, with brand new episodes on Thursdays, as well as millennial superstars and millennial conservatives, AJ Malilo and Steve Rombolo, who host Bridging the Gap. New episodes air on Jersey First TV on Thursdays as well. You'll get to see me live on Monday nights also on Verizon Fios. We're very excited about branching out and really growing the Jersey TV brand. This Monday, folks, as a reminder, at 6 p.m. Eastern time, I will have the president of the New Jersey Cannabis Association, the leading nonprofit organization in New Jersey, advocating for dispensaries and responsible recreational marijuana sales. Edmund DeVoe will join me at 6 p.m. Eastern time to talk about recreational cannabis in New Jersey, as well as the ongoing controversy as to why dispensary licenses are not being distributed equitably, especially among people of color who have been marginalized for decades due to antiquated drug laws. Edmund DeVoe, the president of the New Jersey Cannabis Association, will join me for a very lively conversation. And I also have a lot to say about Tom Moran, folks, from the Star Ledger, who happened to drop my name this week in a sort of poorly worded column. I have a lot to say to Cook Tom Moran in my closing segments. You definitely want to tune in for that on Monday, for sure, at 6 p.m. Eastern time. Folks, he is the illustrious, the glorious, the notorious New Jersey's premier wrestling analyst. Of course, the great PBR superstar, Patrick Rivera. I am New Jersey's premier award-winning journalist, Top 100 Latino. Via the Latino Spirit Online Magazine, we'll be having a ceremony on April 13th to honor all the top Latinos. So I'm looking forward to that at the State Theater in New Brunswick. Former stopping grounds for me during my undergraduate days at Rutgers. And certainly the People's Choice and the People's Voice, folks, Fernando Uribe here. Don't forget to check out all our episodes at blogtalkradio.com/workinthemarks. Of course, brought to you by Famcast Media and our great producer, D. Rotten. Also, folks, make sure you check us out on Facebook. Like us there as well. Also follow us on Instagram and Twitter at @working_the_marks on Instagram. And of course, follow us on Twitter at @working_marks. Folks, if we're talking wrestling, if we're talking sports entertainment, and if we are working the marks, it's always here on Blog Talk Radio. Folks, we'll see you next week here. Enjoy the Elimination Chamber on Peacock. Enjoy President's Day weekend. Please party responsibly. And folks, we'll see you next week here on Blog Talk Radio. Once again, brought to you by Famcast Media, as Patrick and Fernando are always working the marks. Have a great one, folks.
Not that long, guys.